Dr. Judy Mikovits has been called one of the most accomplished scientists of her generation. Her 1991 doctoral thesis revolutionized the treatment of HIV/AIDS. At the height of her career, Dr. Mikovits published a blockbuster article in the journal Science. The controversial article sent shockwaves through the scientific community as it revealed that the common use of animal and human fetal tissues were unleashing devastating plagues of chronic diseases. For exposing their deadly secrets, the minions of Big Pharma waged war on Dr. Mikovits, destroying her good name, career, and personal life. Now, as the fate of nations hang in the balance, Dr. Mikovits is naming names of those behind the plague of corruption that places all human life in danger. So you made a discovery that conflicted with the agreed-upon narrative.
Correct.
And for that, they did everything in their powers to destroy your life.
Correct.
You were arrested.
Correct.
And then you were put under a gag order.
For 5 years, if I went on social media, if I said anything at all, they would find new evidence and put me back in jail. And it was one of the few times I cried. And it was because I knew there was no evidence the first time. And they, when you can unleash that kind of force to force someone into bankruptcy with a perfect credit score, and so that I couldn't bring my 97 witnesses, which included the heads, Tony Fauci, you know, Ian Lipkin, the heads of the public health and HHS, who would have had to testify that we did absolutely nothing wrong.
And so what did they charge you with?
Nothing.
But you were in jail.
I was held in jail with no charges. I was called a fugitive.
You just heard Dr. Judy Mikovits talking about her nightmare situation. If you haven't heard of Dr. Mikovits by now, you have to have been living under a rock because she is quite the sensation right now. What you heard was a clip from a film, from the trailer of a film called Plandemic. The trailer itself is now very hard to find on the internet because it was taken off of Facebook and YouTube, basically censored. So, Dr. Mikovits, we're very pleased to have you here today. Dr. Mikovits began her science career as a protein chemist for the National Cancer Institute. At NCI, she entered a 20-year collaboration with Dr. Frank Rossetti, a pioneer in the field of human retrovirology. In 2009, Mikovits and Rossetti led a team that discovered a strong association between a previously unknown retrovirus and myalgic encephalomyelitis, commonly known as chronic fatigue syndrome. Dr. Mikovits is the co-author of the runaway bestseller Plague of Corruption, a book revealing her explosive findings about the retrovirus linked to epidemic levels of chronic fatigue syndrome, autism, and possibly cancer that shook the scientific research committee and triggered massive retaliation against her. Mikovits also exposes in her book a long history of rampant corruption among scientists pressured to produce results that cover up crippling or deadly side effects of biologics approved for medical use, and the mafia-like tactics, sometimes leading to death, used against those who blow the whistle or don't toe the line. So welcome, Dr. Mikovits. It's such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you so much, Christina. It's a pleasure to be here.
So just if you could just tell us, what is it exactly that you discovered and what happened when you made that public?
We isolated for the first time a new family of retroviruses that were a family of mouse retroviruses. So these are retroviruses that, you know, cause cancer and neurological and neurodegenerative diseases in mouse models that we study in the lab. So they were called murine leukemia related retroviruses, xenotropic because they were in humans. They had been described a few years earlier as sequences in people with aggressive in men with aggressive prostate cancer, but it had never been isolated. And so we isolated them and associated them with myalgic encephalomyelitis chronic fatigue syndrome, which basically for 30 years had been ignored or stigmatized, even worse, stigmatized by the government when previously other retroviruses were associated with chronic fatigue syndrome. And it used to be called non-HIV AIDS. So what happened was that the blood supply was contaminated with HIV in the 80s and 90s, and it quickly became realized after our study was published that these mouse-related viruses had been in the blood supply and infecting and destroying the lives of primarily women, 4-to-1 women get the disease, since the early 90s. And so when that discovery was made and the broader disease associations, blood bleeding disorders like ITP, lots of cancers, lots of autoimmune and neuroimmune diseases began to be associated with this family of viruses, it was clear that the contaminated blood supply and then vaccines that were mixing animal tissues, like the polio vaccine, like the MMR, like the flu vaccines, were actually carrying these viruses into people and causing these diseases.
So you're saying that when you talked about the blood supply being tainted, was the blood supply tainted by people getting vaccinations, or was it tainted in some other way? Obviously, you're saying vaccinations also tainted, caused this in people, but is that also why the blood supply was tainted?
Because these people were not called to be sick. They had been denied a viral etiology, its cause or association with the disease, even for 30 years. I wasn't the first woman a scientist who associated retroviruses with the disease. Elaine DeFreitas, 20 years earlier at the Wistar in Philadelphia, had described retroviruses associated with people with the disease. So with the blood supply, yes, because of the stigma, it was ignored in our work, both Elaine's and mine, destroyed and said not to exist, while these people continue to donate blood. So if you're vaccinated and you're putting these viruses by way of vaccines and you're taking them directly to the blood supply, as healthy people and many healthy people give blood.
Now, what happened when this paper that you did, it came out in Science Magazine, right? In a journal,
yeah.
Science Journal.
Right.
And what happened to you?
Well, initially it was met with great fanfare because even National Academy member John Coffin accompanied that article with one new virus, how many old diseases? But it was like the paper was literally, which was published first online October 8th, 2009. It was like the shot heard around the world because these diseases had been increasing at alarming rates, and there were millions of people tremendously ill and dying. So this gave you a therapeutic target. But when it was realized that it wasn't one new virus, how many old diseases were associated with it, it was how many new viruses and how many old diseases that had exploded because of these viruses causing these diseases,
so,
because of vaccines and a contaminated blood supply.
So what are the implications of that?
Became bigger than the 25 million Americans carrying these viruses.
So what were the implications of that? Do you think it was the implications of that that caused sort of this establishment to step in? I mean,
This was 25 times HIV AIDS. And you know, when it was found that Arthur Ashe and Ryan White were infected by way of contaminated blood, then it was, again, it was numbers lower than 1%. There were only 1 million Americans in 1991 at the height of AIDS with HIV, and this cost our economy and the economies of nations because of the contaminated blood supply. This is 25 times this, trillions of dollars. It would have cost the federal government because they caused it, and worse, because of the vaccines and the mandates and the failure to do the testing since 1986, when all liability was removed, and the laws were changed such that they knew the risk. It's called zoonosis, as we all know now. When you mix bat tissue with cell lines, you get things like coronaviruses as well. And this is the big, oh my God, the country and the economy couldn't afford it because they mandated vaccines on the populations and they ignored the data for 30 years. For 30 years, they ignored this. For 30 years, they didn't do the appropriate testing and cleaning up of the vaccines because all liability was removed in 1986. So this would have been, as the foreword of our first book, Plague, says, a disease to affect the economies of nations. And federal agencies admitted just that they were scared to death what would happen if XMRV worked out. And as your audience might not know, that fugitive from justice charge had no warrant behind it. So the journal reported in Science Insider on November 19, 2011, as I'm held in jail without bail, that the charge of fugitive from justice must have come from one of several federal agencies in Washoe County, Nevada, because it wasn't the place I lived. There was no warrant at all. So they were guessing as to where the warrant was. Well, Tony Fauci and the higher levels of the government issued that warrant so that I couldn't participate in replication studies or go into an NIH lab without being arrested for the next 6 years and probably counting. I was at NIH in 2016 and it still said I was a fugitive from justice.
So they didn't want you to do replication studies because if you were able to replicate what you had done, then the jig would be up. They would have to address this epidemic of, oh my God. So it's so interesting in your book. You talk about, and even now, by the way, Judy, when you just look, you just put in Judy Mikovits, the first thing you see is Judy Ann Mikovits is a former American research scientist. I don't know how you become a former researcher.
Yes.
Who is known for her discredited medical claims, such as the murine endogenous retroviruses are linked to chronic fatigue syndrome. But interestingly, something happened. I think this happened actually after you did your report. There was a thing called the Serous Intercept Blood System that went online. Is that correct?
Actually, yes. We actually identified on March 29, 2011, I gave a talk at the New York Academy of Science, and it was all about the blood supply and the contamination. Well, my mentor, Dr. Rossetti, who I've worked with for 37 years, 20 of those at the National Cancer Institute, we now have a company, so he always taught me, don't show a problem without a solution. So the day the paper was published, the company Serous came to me and said, we have a method that I think would it decontaminate the blood supply of all of any kind of RNA viruses, including these retroviruses. They had shown it worked with HIV. This was a different family, but the technology suggested it would work. So we started a 2-year collaboration. And at that meeting on March 29, 2011, I showed the slides that said, no problem. Here's the solution. We can clean it up. So 3 years after I was jailed in 2014, of course, the Serous method was quietly approved to clean up the blood supply. And you know the implication there, as I'm held in jail and held silent at that time, all my data, all our samples, everything removed from our labs when I'm fired, you know, literally standing on the street September 29th, so 6 weeks earlier. I'm fired on the street. Everything is taken from me, from my two offices, our freezers, every sample, everything is locked down from me or my staff at that time. And of course, then the Cirrus would have quietly and the government paid and cleaned up the blood supply. And pretended that I made it all up and it was never contaminated. So, but for catching them in the middle of this crime, as my postdoc, my student did on September 29th, the day I was fired, we wouldn't be sitting here talking because they would have covered this up just as they're covering up COVID and nobody would have ever known. But as you've probably read the end of the book, you know that that's not how it played out.
Yeah, I know. So just tell our
which
listeners
is the big,
what. Go ahead.
Which is the fun of it all, right?
Well, I mean, your story is just—it's so shocking to the conscience, and of course, you know, speaking of COVID, I would love for you to talk about that. First of all, it seems to me, before we get to COVID, it seems to me you have a lawsuit based on the implementation of the Cirrus Intercept blood system. I mean, if you know, why did they if the blood supply was not contaminated as your research had suggested, then why even do this? Why use the Cirrus Intercept blood system?
Well, yeah, we had several lawsuits for everything. So, but again, all of my data was locked down and held from me. All of those data were covered up, obviously, with Cirrus and the people. You know, this is how the government works. Cirrus made a fortune. All of the people that were on the fraudulent paper that was published literally while I'm held in jail without bond, saying it was a failure to confirm study, and this was published in the journal Science, and it said failure to confirm the association, and then implied that the blood supply was contaminated with the infectious molecular clone, the synthetic clone from the Silverman Cleveland Clinic lab, which was just pure hogwash. It was contaminated with many strains of virus, and this is what the government covered up. They cleaned it up. You know, all the data's gone, so I can't. I did have three lawsuits. I filed a criminal affidavit because I couldn't get any government agency to file criminal charges for extortion and criminal fraud, misappropriation of federal funds, everything against, you know, these players. These players are too powerful, like Tony Fauci, like Michael Bush of the Blood Systems Research Institute, like Simone Glenn, the head of the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute. These people all participated in this fraud and planned it, and of course, nothing's happened to any of them. My whistleblower False Claims Act lawsuit was held under seal for almost 5 years and dropped, meaning the government was going to do something about it in investigating my claims before they took the case and gave me whistleblower status. Well, that never happened. When I showed slides at the Truth About Cancer meeting in Anaheim last October 12th, the very next business day, a Monday, my case was dropped with prejudice, as if I made it all up, you know, and had no basis for it after 5 years under seal where I couldn't even say I had a case. Similar nefarious things happened to my civil rights case, which was also dismissed. So I've been denied my civil rights, you know, literally since 2011. So, no, I don't have lawsuits and have been, you know, literally not stopped trying to get the Justice Department to do, you know, its job and return my civil rights and return my property. That's long gone. And, you know, I can't expect that to ever happen.
I wonder if you don't have an international case. I mean, anyone who has taken a vaccine that has been produced in the United States or whatever, wouldn't anyone around the world, wouldn't they be victims of this of this situation?
Yes, we found this virus internationally in German cohorts with German scientists who found the same thing in the UK, in London. That's the talk I gave September 6, 2010, a year after the paper came out, when many had basically replicated our find and confirmed and extended our findings, finding other disease associations like lymphomas, like leukemia, like ITP. But nobody can sue anybody for a vaccine here in the United States, because as I said, in 1986, you know, as Tony Fauci says, stood next to then President Ronald Reagan and said, okay, we won't make your vaccines anymore unless you remove all liability. And at the time, it was the DTP shot with lots of cellular debris and garbage that was killing kids and destroying lives. And lawsuits were being won. So the ability to file a lawsuit, if you use the word vaccine, it's free of the only immunity that provides is for the manufacturer. Doesn't provide immunity, and it causes cancer, AIDS, neurological diseases, Parkinson's, Lou Gehrig's disease, all because of the garbage. And it's not just one thing. It's many, many things. And I believe COVID is a cover up of that vaccine injury. COVID is the disease, the clinical disease COVID, the microvascular changes, the various things they're associating, Kawasaki disease, all of this stuff. That's not a coronavirus. That's retroviruses. And the people that are most susceptible to the coronavirus, the coronaviruses are those who have been previously injured. Those people, those 25 million Americans at least, who in 2011 we had identified, those will be the people who die with a flu vaccination. Those will be the people who are dying, and it's being called COVID-19.
Oh my God, I'm practically shocked into speechlessness. I was just going to quote this sentence that you had in your book that just lit my hair on fire. It says every vaccine has been grown in animal tissue, usually of several different species, including monkey, mouse, bird, and cow. Each one of these cross-species events has the potential to transfer a pathogen to humans or to create some new strain that can cause harm. We have fired billions of bullets of biological ammunition at the human. I just thought to myself, this is a situation that's only going to get bigger unless the whole vaccine and retrovirus situation is addressed. And it's almost like, how do you begin to address it? You can't address it here. Is there any way you can start addressing it by starting overseas and bringing it here?
Well, as you know, the WHO, all of these health organizations overseas, they've been taking these vaccines overseas. Their own blood supplies, that was the talk I gave September 6, 2010, the London blood supply, 4% contaminated. That's when Francis Collins ordered Tony Fauci to do a large multi-center study a year after our paper came out. And that was when federal agencies were scared to death if it, quote unquote, if XMRVs worked out. What does it mean, work out? So the at every level, just as the WHO is involved in preventing medicine and was involved in the plague of corruption that is COVID-19, worldwide leaders, health leaders, have been lying about this. For decades, they're covering up their crimes. And this is what was revealed at an international vaccine meeting, last November and December. every one of these agency heads for the WHO and other vaccine manufacturers, most of them are overseas. They're in China. They're in Switzerland, Basel, Switzerland. The head of France, Sanofi Pasteur. They don't make most vaccines here in America. They make them overseas, and they've been all part of the cover up. Of this and so much more. It's so much more than the retroviruses, and that's why the SARS-CoV-2 was grown and manufactured and studied in the Vero monkey kidney cells. These Vero monkey kidney cells are the same cell line, continuous cell line. We grow our polio vaccines. So what other viruses are we carrying over there, and where actually did SARS-CoV-2 come from? This is why I've been saying it's not engineered, but it's absolutely not a natural, not necessarily engineered, but not absolutely not a natural evolution. If you grow this in 200-liter fermenters in cell lines where you grow other vaccines, you have to grow viruses in cell lines to study them. And it's very easy to contaminate. These viruses are aerosolized in these laboratories, and in only 2 weeks you can contaminate a new lot of vaccine. So as they're manufactured and they're never tested and they're never cleaned up, and the Corvelva group in Italy last year did a study on the MMR vaccines, an independent group away from and using scanning electron micrographs or microscopes, they saw all kinds of garbage in these vaccines, and dozens horse viruses, not just retroviruses, endogenous human viruses from aborted fetal tissues in these vaccines of all kinds. And that's why that sentence, every vaccine has even bacterial, even yeast. We think of mold, mycoplasma, Borrelia, the causative agent of Lyme disease, the mast cell activation disorders, the yeast. There's the vulnerable are given these shots. The infants before 3 years old, dozens of these shots by the time they go to school. And yes, these things transmit through drinking glasses, through coughing, through the way they're saying COVID is spread. And these do live on surfaces for days and weeks, because I did those studies. So this is the problem, and this is the cover up. And they're not going to, if they clean them up, then you prove what caused it. And the whole system, the whole world's economic system of this cabal collapses.
Well, I mean, but it's got to happen. I mean, it's untenable to continue poisoning the entire human population, isn't it? I mean,
yes, and that's why we're fighting. That's why this time is perfect for our book. As you know, Plague of Corruption reads like prophecy. When we wrote the first book, Plague, we had no idea. I was focusing on the blood supply. That was our background as a team. Only one of my colleagues and former colleagues from our HIV AIDS work said, hey, the most likely way that mouse viruses got into humans was by way of biological therapies. And up to recent years, that was mostly mouse tissue vaccines. And that's the largest class of biologicals. And as you know, from all of all that's been happening, that Del Bigtree, RFK Jr. at Children's Health Defense, they proved that with FOIA's Freedom of Information Act requests and lawsuits, that not a single safety study had been done. And that was what was admitted at the international meeting. We have no idea. And these things are killing people. And scientists who speak out, Timothy Cunningham of the CDC, the PhD scientist who disappeared and was later found dead and said to have committed suicide shortly after he made public comments saying the flu shot of 2017 was killing people. Yeah, these we do vaccine court. It's in our book. We're experts in the so-called vaccine court, which is not a court at all, because there's no discovery. There's nothing. The victims of the injury just stand before not even a judge, a single person with no scientific background. His sole job is to make sure the vaccine is innocent at all costs, and these people's lives are further destroyed as they realize the level of corruption that will never admit the damage that these vaccines are doing worldwide.
I mean, I find it very interesting that the vaccine court was set up after there was an act that was set up to remove liability from pharmaceutical companies for injuries or death caused by childhood vaccines, right?
Correct. And that's the 1986 Vaccine Injury Compensation Act. Or I think that's what it's called in MDI. So, but at any rate, President Ronald Reagan signed it into law again, scared because, you know, the manufacturers were making dirty vaccines and the victims were winning lawsuits in the tens of millions of dollars. And that was a lot of money in the 80s. And they would have, you know, that's what moves, you know, society is you can't make garbage products. And worse yet, that 1986 law removing the liability began to mandate them on and increase the numbers because all a drug maker had to do was call it a vaccine and they didn't do any safety testing because they don't have to advertise. Because they're being mandated on people. So you've got a pure profit product that you don't have to spend the dozens of years I spent as a protein chemist, as a natural products chemist, purifying and making biological therapies for cancer and AIDS. We spent tens of years. I have a drug that we've worked on since 2004 and the FDA won't approve it. Course, because it works and they don't, the big pharma doesn't make zillions of dollars. So the FDA,
what is the drug? What is the drug and what does it do?
Oh, the drug is called Anustat, and it's made by a private company, and it's made up of four different plant extracts, so biological, natural product therapies combined to take advantage of synergies, and it prevents cytokine storms. It was originally designed as a prevention strategy, and it's a therapeutic strategy that modulates after infection, because of course I was looking at these infectious agents back in 2005, and so it stops the cytokine storms. It provides intracellular antioxidant. It's a natural product therapy that we actually proposed, you know, 15 years ago and even 6 months ago to the president that it would work in COVID, to Merck, to the companies, to the FDA. It won't get approved by the FDA. Because, as you know, hydroxychloroquine, you know, they call the data anecdotal, and we've had 10 years of study with that drug and millions of dollars by this family spent to bring this to market. And there's a long line and a lot of money to pay to get in that long line, as our FDA doesn't approve, you know, the small company drugs. It's just a nightmare. The cabal held at all levels of the government. That's why my experience is like none others, because I've always, you know, looked at the causes and then developed the therapy simultaneously in a translational setting, working directly with the patients, and that's how you make huge change. And of course, that doesn't work in these days of patents and things like that, where big money has to control everything.
Well, and the other thing is what you're saying is that you're using natural, you're using natural items to make this, and of course you, to get a patent, you have to synthesize something, right? You have to synthesize nature instead of using natural components.
Well, actually you can, if it's not obvious how you put it together. So we do have a patent for because it's a non-obvious formulation that takes advantage of synergies in extracts. So it's not just the plants, it's extracts and chemistries and combining. This is what we did in the 80s in the beginning, that very first job of mine. Adriamycin is still used as a cancer therapy, and it's called the Red Devil because it comes from plants. So before the recombinant era and targeted therapies, we used to make drugs that way that we still still used today. So, yeah, it won't get approved because it's not a single agent. But it did satisfy the 2004 Act that said, you know, you could make drugs this way with extracts containing multiple components as long as you had the chemical footprint to go with the biological activity, which we do. But at the same time, the FDA just simply says, oh, yeah, no, we're not going to approve that, just as they rush through things like remdesivir while preventing type 1 interferon, which, you know, 40 years of data proving low dose that is already manufactured to, you know, low dose would prevent this whole thing. So these prevention strategies, prophylactic strategies, make no money. And you don't need to do these diagnostic tests, which PCR was never meant for diagnosis. What they're doing in coronavirus, COVID-19, they're just driving the whole market, as you can see, the whole world with fear towards, okay, if you want to ever get out of your house again, get the flu vaccine. And I say that now because you might say, wait a minute, no, isn't it, we're going to wait for the vaccine for SARS-CoV-2, the COVID-19 vaccine. No, they're going to drive the disease and drive the fear toward that vaccine, which will be the most toxic thing ever made intentionally. They're going to drive that with this year's flu shot. I want your listeners to know how dirty and how damaging, and that flu shot alone kills the patient population that is most vulnerable to COVID-19, and they'll call these flu shot deaths COVID-19, and they'll drive the second wave as they drove the first wave with the flu vaccinations in Italy, in Europe, and here in the United States. And they continue to do it, as you know, because Robert Redfield, who knows this, is that these shots has been in these positions with the CDC knowingly since the early days of AIDS. He knows these vaccines are driving and causing these pandemics and driving. You know, the data are published that flu shots are giving other respiratory infections to people, which is basically what you're doing, along with some bird retroviruses and others, other viruses and pathogens from birds in these flu shots, and in the case of the Italian vaccine, from dogs, because the vaccines or the viruses are grown in dog cells. And again, they don't clean them up. They just pull them out of the fermenter and inject them into people, and you have no idea what they're injecting. And this is what they're trying to do. Oh, if you don't want another wave, you know, and you want to go back to work, get the flu shot, and that will drive the next wave. You know, there's essentially no data that said the SARS-CoV-2 virus had anything to do with COVID-19. 0.004% death rate, less than the normal influenza season. The diagnostic tests with PCR were contaminated, weren't the right test, has nothing to do with the virus. The antibody tests suggest that the virus went through this country a year earlier, and most people were actually immune and not even affected, had cleared the virus. They're mixing all those data and putting the numbers together to make it seem like something it wasn't, and probably less than 1,000 people died from the actual infection. I haven't seen a single autopsy report, and we have toxicologists and friends here who are saying the same thing. They won't do the autopsies, and when they did, there wasn't evidence of the virus budding from the lungs and doing the damage of the fibrosis in the lungs that would have killed them. There's no evidence. An infection is not a disease. SARS-CoV-2 does not equal COVID-19.
Oh my God. I mean, it sounds like such an evil plot. I mean, you have Bill Gates out front here. He's setting up all these vaccine making factories or enterprises or whatever. He's out there, you know, he wants to bag tag and whatever everybody with a vaccine chip and so on and so forth. And you're saying this is all just, it's almost like a eugenics program or something. It's I mean, I hate to even use that word, you know, but it sounds so strange and bizarre.
It's absolutely a genocide program. It is, and it's not the first time. We can sit here and think and realize, oh, it was bird flu, it was swine flu, it's H1N1, it's MERS, the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome in 2009, it's SARS in 2001, experimentation has been going on my entire year. Ebola of 14 wasn't a natural evolution of the Zaire strain or that strain that did the damage. It was a lab-generated strain as well, and that was covered up.
It was a lab-generated strain, did you say?
Correct. The strain that killed 21,000 Liberians in 2014 was called, oh, they forgot to cook their meat, and again, it was probably bats and other things in that Sierra Leone outbreak, and it was associated with a vaccination program, and the strain of Ebola was aerosolized, that is, you could have contagious Ebola, anyone, like SARS-CoV-2, contagious retroviruses, where you can catch cancer and cough cancer on someone, and it won't develop for years later. And then that strain was sequenced in labs and covered up, had 300 mutations from the Zaire chain. This is the kind of things we're saying with SARS-CoV-2. You don't grow viruses in monkey kidney cells without picking up other passengers that can do damage, including the kinds of viruses we isolated and showed were contaminating the vaccines, the families of viruses, back in 2009 through 11. So they've been ramping up ever since. And nobody's looking, except, the hundreds of scientists who are in my world, who know that, their careers and their lives will be destroyed if they dare say a thing.
So you had just came back from an autism conference. Is that correct?
Correct.
And I was so shocked, like when they talk about autism and how it went from one in, I'm trying to remember the statistics in plague, from 1 to 40, from 1 in 10,000 to 1 in 40 in a span of, like, I don't know, 10 years or something? Is that
correct?
Am I getting my, so my question is, what is it that they're saying it is if it isn't vaccine poisoning?
They're basically saying it's a genetic disease. You just have, we have better detection. Oh, we didn't have, it's not that autism rates have gone from 1 in 10,000 to, I'm 62 years old and I don't think I ever saw an autistic kid in school at all. And they said, oh, well, they were at home. No, they weren't. ADHD, things like that. They're saying better diagnosis. Oh, we can just see it better now. No, when I was a 5-year-old, number one, I didn't get any vaccines for, anything, because my mom said we had natural immunity. We got the natural infections. She said, you don't need that. Thank God. And the measles vaccine didn't come in till I'd already contracted the infection anyway. We had our childhood diseases. We Yep. only got polio, sugar cube, and the cowpox sub-Q for smallpox under the arm when we were 5 years old and walking in kindergarten. And it's not that those don't do damage, but now a newborn in the first hours of life is given a hepatitis B vaccine that in the 90s was made from human plasma, and God only knows what was injected in those kids. And then hundreds more, 2 months, 4 months, 6 months. Those polio shots at 2 months, 4 months, 6 months are made in those Vero monkey kidney cells now. So yes, they said it's better diagnosis, and it tracks exactly on a steep slope with every shot that's added to the schedule.
So I was really shocked to learn at the end of your book that you had contracted chronic fatigue. And
I have contracted XMRV. I do not have chronic fatigue syndrome.
Oh.
This is what we're going to keep saying. XMRV is the infection. The disease is chronic fatigue syndrome. If you can mediate the virus and keep it dormant by the techniques that I learned, this is why my PhD thesis was so important. It was a body of work, and it showed if you kept HIV from spreading through the person's body from the tissue reservoirs, if you kept it dormant and quiet, and we never vaccinated HIV-infected people, they never need develop AIDS. No, I seroconverted in 2010 to XMRVs, have a whopping amount of XMRV virus and protein in my body, and have been working since that decade to keep the virus latent with doctors, with in fact, the drug Anustat, because, in fact, I made it for these virus-associated diseases and the mechanism. So you don't have to develop COVID, as we know most don't, from a SARS-CoV-2 infection. If you keep the inflammatory, if you keep the immune system balanced, and these are my discoveries, and we did the same in the XMRVs, you don't ever have to develop the disease. But as you hear my lungs, I can develop lung cancer because that is my sensitivity as a child to pleurisy. There are XMRV viruses, these mouse-related viruses that are so strongly associated with lung cancers, with heart disease. You saw at the end of the book our friend Sean and how the medical community treats that. These viruses can cause heart attacks, heart disease, neurological disease, cancer, but we know how to fix it. But in order to fix it, we have to recognize what caused it. And this is why the rush to get everybody injected with the flu vaccines and get everybody sick so that they will have, you know, the contract tracers, they come to our house. If you've had a flu vaccine, you will test positive. Again, they're telling you what the test is, and you have no idea what they're looking for. But flu vaccines carry coronaviruses. Doesn't have to be that strain. Remember, and you will have a fever because that's what a vaccine does. It stimulates that immune response, that storm. So then the contract tracer takes you from your home, and what you had was the flu vaccine. So if you don't get those shots, if you don't wear those masks, if you don't immune suppress yourself and don't let anybody go near you with a test or contact tracer of any kind, you won't be called COVID-19. Yes, I'm at great risk right now, not only of cancer, but of being killed and having it called COVID-19. And then that's what they're doing. Oh, am I dying of the retrovirus that was contagious in our laboratories? You remember the chapter of plague that said, oh my God, we can't afford to retrofit our labs.
Right.
That was the July 22nd invitation only meeting. Oh my God, we can't afford to make all of our labs biosafety level 3 so that the lab workers wouldn't get sick with contagious cancer, multiple sclerosis, autism. Look at Fort Detrick. Look at my labs. 3 of my closest colleagues who did most of the mouse work. Thank God I worked with HIV in a biosafety level 3. My colleagues, my office mate of 15 years, Sally Spence, had 3 different kinds of cancer and died before she was 60 years old. My postdoctoral mentor died of liver cancer, all of these associated with the mouse gamma retroviruses that they called, unintended spread of a biosafety level 2 pathogen. You can walk through the literature and the scientific fraud of how they covered up how these, when we recognized in 2011 that many of these viruses were in most of our cell lines, that we make vaccines in, that we make other biological therapies in. We use these backbones in the CAR T cell, so-called called cancer cure. That means chimeric antigen receptor T cell. Oh, we're using a mouse gamma retrovirus backbone because it zeroes in and infects the cell and integrates into the DNA in certain hot spots. We're causing cancers and publishing it on Time magazine as cures, and we don't want to stop lucrative practice once we realize what was going on. The lab workers were getting sick. It's contagious cancer. That was what was clear in other families, and that's what we did in the end of the book, is talked about this. So these families are at risk right now, and I guarantee you they're the ones that the government is trying to kill. If they mandate flu vaccines on those of us already infected, they will kill us.
So you...
We won't take them. We're smart enough. That's why I'm talking. Please, 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 nobody get a flu shot. Because 25 million Americans are walking around as carriers of these viruses from previous vaccines. And if you see a lot of familial disease, if you see Lou Gehrig's disease, and if you see, young people dying of colon cancer, 40-year-olds with colon cancer, and 19-year-olds with neuroendocrine tumors, and it's the same story. Cancer institutes, the whole cities here in San Diego and La Jolla, whole cities of patients, the diseases, everyone knows everyone. Look at Stand Up to Cancer, a football stadium where everybody's holding a picture of somebody. Yeah, the vaccine program, folks, and a contaminated blood supply for 40 years.
So you talked about addressing trying to help your body deal with this garbage from vaccines. And you
Correct.
Talked about deuterium, depleted water, and medical marijuana. Could you talk
Absolutely.
About those things?
Absolutely. So, well, our friends, I was introduced to deuterium, depleted water, which is heavy water, which cripples, meaning it's D2O instead of H2O. A deuterium molecule has an extra, proton, and so it's heavy water. So if you think of this is my friend Dr. Laszlo Boros, who did a lot of the pioneering work for decades. He's a professor of pediatrics at UCLA and the naturopathic doctor, our colleague Dr. Petra Dorfman. They've explained to me over the last 5 years as they've helped me because deuterium is actually a growth factor for retroviruses. So the heavy water slows down the reaction and further cripples the mitochondria. And again, the mechanisms are complicated, but these two and researchers around the world know it. So they've been supplying me and others with the deuterium depleted water so that the growth factor, so that the retroviruses don't spread through my body and we keep them quiet. And so in cannabis, we only discovered or recognized the endogenous cannabinoid system. So we have a system of receptors, hundreds of receptors and endogenous molecules that react with this. And this is a lipid signaling system for fats, which I call it the dimmer switch on the immune system. So the cannabinoids can calm the fire. We published in 2011, right along with our work with identifying the XMRV, we published the cytokine storm signature associated with disease. So when you see that signature, when I see those biomarkers go up, when I see my natural killer cells get crippled, when I monitor my blood and say, okay, that flame is too high, you can use cannabis and turn it down to calm the inflammatory response and drive towards type 1 interferon responses that are antiviral. And most people with the XMRV virus have a crippled component of their frontline immune defense to make that type 1 interferon. And that's critical in clearing coronavirus as well, other RNA viruses. That's why you don't expose you know, HIV or XMRV infected people with vaccines, because those are other viruses and my immune system's working full time. I do not want my viruses activated. So you don't do it from a standpoint, and you can monitor your immune response and show that you've calmed the fire. You don't do stress. You don't absolutely don't put me in a mask, because I will asphyxiate and I need the oxygen, and I don't make intracellular glutathione as well, but because the deuterium depleted water, the heavy water, I have to clear that from my mitochondria, and the glyphosate in the foods that also depletes your intracellular glutathione, your antioxidants, and you can see how it becomes a vicious cycle that the virus is, I call it the war between the microbes, from a paper published by Andreas Lisko and his colleagues, our colleagues, back in 2009. So this is how you keep the balance in the immune system with these viruses. And so, yeah, vitamin D, sunlight, no vaccines, grounding, deuterium depleted water, clean food, clean water. I work to keep my body in ketosis and clear all the toxins, to keep my macrophages, to keep my dendritic cells as healthy as possible. And I use interferon alpha externally as a nasal, as a spray in my nose or my mouth to prevent from getting infected with any RNA virus each flu season. And therefore, I haven't progressed to, I call it AIDS, acquired endocannabinoid immune dysfunction. That's my 21st century AIDS, caused by these contaminants and the crippling. It's not just the viruses. It's the mercury. It's the aluminum, because that cripples the very immune cells you need to respond, and it leaves that the endocannabinoid system flame on. So every shot, every toxin is like throwing gasoline on the fire instead of throwing gasoline on the grass.
Do you think that we should try and move towards like a plant-based health system, where we use plants instead of these, you know, chemicals?
Well, we certainly need healthy food from healthy plants and animals. So we forget that we're injecting other animal viruses into our cows, into, you know, we're putting hormones, we're putting GMOs, we're genetically modifying our animal food stock too, and crippling, making our food from the animal kingdom unhealthy. But in the plants, we're doing the same thing. We've got GMO, we've got Roundup on everything. We've got GMO plants, tomatoes, food. We've destroyed our corn in this country, and there's glyphosate is used as a drying agent, even if food is actually grown organically. If you don't monitor food, plants, or animals from beginning of the chain of command all the way to the end into the person, our food is heavily contaminated, and that's why as a country we're getting sicker and sicker, because we can't get clean food, either plant or animal based, because plants have retroviruses too. And their virome in plants, their microbiome that we should be eating these various things and having gut balance in our gut microbiome, we're eating processed food. So what have we been driven to in COVID-19? Oh, the farmers markets are closed. I can't get clean food. I can't go in, you know, in the grocery store. I mean, breakfast cereal, essentially every food in the grocery store is contaminated, and scientists around the world are showing this, including some at UC San Diego here, colleagues we're working with. You know, you wouldn't think that a box of Cheerios is heavily contaminated with glyphosate, a known cancer-causing toxin. Yes, and this is the big problem. And so we can go in there and we can get in a grocery store, we can wear our mask, which will immune compromise us, our CD4 memory T cells and our type 1 interferon compromise. We'll be making more virus. We'll inject that flu vaccine, and we'll be literally coughing and making more of that flu vaccine through the mask.
You've got to come back. You've got to come back and finish this conversation. Thank you so much, Dr. Mike Vitz.